And now joining us via phone from San Antonio is Frank Holm, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. They offer a couple of ETFs, including a gold miners ETF. Frank is also interim chairman of Hive Blockchain Technologies, which owns cryptocurrency mining facilities. So Frank is obviously very uniquely positioned to talk both gold and cryptos, which is what we'll be focusing on today. Frank, always a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my thoughts.
So, Frank, let's start with cryptos. As I mentioned, you are involved with Hive Blockchain Technologies. I know you attended the big crypto and blockchain conference in May, Consensus. How did you first get involved in the crypto space?
I was trying to launch an ETF, and I quickly found out that the great concerns of the SEC was AML, anti-money laundering concerns, and that some of these coins could have come from Russians or Chinese hackers, etc. So there was no way they wanted to have a tainted coin showing up in a listed New York Stock Exchange ETF. So I went to Canada and got the same pushback of the AML concerns, and I had all this sort of knowledge going nowhere, and friends of mine approached me that there was this opportunity to take the first industrial-scale company public, and would I go on as a seed shareholder, and I did. So I put money into that rather than trying to battle the regulatory legal costs, which I think are just going to continue to be long drawn out, and got into mining Ethereum and then Bitcoin. And so when we validate a transaction, we mine virgin coins. So they're not tainted. They're brand new, and they're of higher demand because of this clean coin.
Okay, so anyone who's been following Bitcoin over the past couple of years knows it's been a wild ride. Bitcoin climbed all the way up to nearly 20,000 in December 2017, then fell 80-plus percent to around 3,200 in December of 2018. But now it's one of the top-performing assets this year. It's up like 120%. Give us your take on Bitcoin's price moves over the past couple of years. Do you think there are any real drivers here, or is the market still trying to make heads or tails of exactly what Bitcoin is?
Well, it's an incredible piece of speculation, and is capturing its own followers as an asset class. I think that that's what's really important, that you're even having institutions, endowment funds buying, even putting 50 basis points to 1% into their funds. But it's still speculation. And I think it's really quite remarkable when we take a look at that Bitcoin peaked with the creation of the futures market, which was basically a way that a lot of people believed that it was to suppress Bitcoin. And we had nothing but a negative news all along until this year in February, when JP Morgan came up with their own cryptocurrency, a stable coin backed by the dollar, and that was the bottom. And then the CME talked about getting rid of their futures contracts because there was not that much interest in them. So I think it's just, you know, it's an early, early stage, a new asset class, a new form of transporting money. It has lots of regulatory hurdles to get through. But what's important for listeners is the daily volatility that is 70% of the time, one standard deviation of the S&P 500 is about 1%. It's the same for bullion. But Bitcoin is 5%. So it's five times the daily volatility. So any type of an uptick like we've seen, it just moves much greater than the overall S&P. And sort of a unique asset class for portfolio diversification.
So Frank, on that note, is someone who's involved in both cryptos and gold, because again, your firm, U.S. Global, does have a long history in the gold market. I'm really curious to get your thoughts on Bitcoin versus gold and sort of the interplay between these two. Do you view Bitcoin as a gold alternative? And I guess if not, how should it be viewed?
No, I don't think it's an alternative. I think down the road it could be like Andy Warhol's original Mao screen paintings that came out at $1,000 and now go for $250,000. Bitcoin's capped at 21 million coins. And it's eventually going to become almost like a collector's item as more people want to have even one coin. And you get a fraction of a coin, but having an original virgin coin over time is going to be like collecting art. It's the way I look at it. You can't wear Bitcoin. Interesting enough, Bitcoin needs to have a gold look to it. It's a coin that looks like gold to give its credibility. And you need electricity for it to work. when you have a crisis like you had in Vietnam about people getting out, it was gold, 24-karat gold that got them out. They didn't have electricity on those boats. So one has to really take a look at gold's historical significance. And what's also really important, that 60% of the demand for gold is love. It's about jewelry demand. And it's about something that you can pass on to your family for generations, like they have in India. Like, India has six times, the women in India wear six times the amount of gold that's in Fort Knox. That's how they protect themselves over centuries from bad government decisions, and at the same time, they wear their wealth. So Bitcoin can't do that. But Bitcoin can facilitate in the new economy, the new digital world. And I think that that's what the thing that really excited me, the whole idea, even quant trading, the idea of the cloud and how it allows you to look at data so differently and movement of funds and flows, et cetera, and especially when you have Ethereum, the second biggest coin, which is a smart contract, which is a new stock exchange that's come out all based on the Ethereum protocol. So I think there's lots of new growth opportunities in this space. And I try to remind people, if you remember Ask Jeeves, I mean, what happened to Ask Jeeves? And then Yahoo, and all of a sudden the survivor is Google. I don't know who's going to survive in this race, but the digital world and new securities coins, it's all coming on the backbone of the success of Bitcoin.
Frank, this is Jason Lank. You mentioned the term location. My understanding is you have operations in Iceland and Sweden. For those not familiar with the details of the mining process, why would you locate mining facilities there?
Green energy. It's clean energy. It's very inexpensive. Now we're finding places in the U.S. To expand where you're getting solar energy, and it's more consistent, and wind energy. So wherever there's renewable energy is where we want to go. We do not want to be where it's coal. We want to be where it's clean energy and also inexpensive energy. The only way you survive in this game is to have cheap electricity.
Frank, going back to the Bitcoin versus gold debate, this is completely anecdotal, but when I talk to younger investors and this topic of Bitcoin versus gold comes up, I've got to tell you, the overwhelming majority of younger investors prefer Bitcoin. That seems to really be where their interest lies. Do you think that could ultimately become a problem for gold down the road? Just as money shifts to younger investors, could that negatively impact gold demand in any way?
I will lay odds that's gender bias data. That's predominantly men. Women are going to take the gold. And if you have a gold-plated or 24-karat Bitcoin going, then they'll take that. No, I think that the idea of gold as a monetary asset, it's the fourth most liquid asset class in the world. And interesting enough, 60% of the demand is not central bankers and quarters. It is jewelry. And I don't think Bitcoin is going to replace that. But I think what happens is that a lot of young men and boys have been playing video games and then now mobile games, et cetera. And there's rewards mechanisms, there's digital money. It's almost like my gender that we used to collect miles for flying. There was a way that was our digital way of being able to upgrade with our miles points, et cetera. And I think that world, the young world, is very caught up with the new experience of digital world, like Tinder. Like the idea that you would trust that person is representing who they are. Uber, it took me a while to trust Uber. It took me longer to trust Airbnb, which is now the biggest hoteler in the world without any hotels. So that new digital world is showing up in our space in quant funds. 70% of the daily trading in the stock market are quant funds. So I think it's really important is that young person you're talking to is a digital world. And I think that the cryptocurrencies and crypto securities are down the road. They're definitely going to relate to it.
All right. Before we move on here, you mentioned Bitcoin ETF at the top and the anti-money laundering concerns that perhaps the SEC had. Do you think the SEC should approve a Bitcoin or crypto ETF?
I think the easiest way to do it was to say that only virgin coins mined in North America could be able to go into an ETF. That way they know there's no tainting on them. And what that would do is that would automatically bifurcate the global Bitcoin prices. So coins coming from China, Russia would automatically go second tier. They'd have to find another space. And it's just like the U.S. dollar is the superior dollar. You could create the superior Bitcoin by doing it this way. That's been my proposal that's on the table, and I hope it connects through. But coming back in this digital world, it's just really, you know, it's interesting to see how it has so many ramifications in every part of our life. I was blown away by a guy, Game Layden, who I met last summer in the sort of crypto space. And he created Machine Zone, which is mobile games. And I was just really shocked when, you know, you see the cape up in commercials for the Super Bowl. Underneath all of that, he's processing 500 million instructions per second in 32 languages for kids to play all over the world, and has done $6 billion in revenue. They need these data centers like we have in Iceland, and I found out that our small data center in Iceland could process 100 million instructions per second. So the longevity of us mining Ethereum all of a sudden means that we could be coming, using our GPU chips, we could be creating a smart city where cameras are put everywhere to protect citizens. Bad people that have not paid their parking tickets could automatically be picked up with these new cameras. So it's interesting to see how it's growing rapidly. The use of the cloud, you need cheap electricity, you need renewable energy, and you need GPU chips.
Frank, your comment on knowing where the Bitcoin are mined and maybe only coins mined in North America being in an ETF, is it possible to track that?
Oh, yes. It's an open ledger. There's new technology out there that the law enforcement uses, the DOJ, the FBI, et cetera. I know they do it in Canada, too. And I know the banks that where we sell through always go and check our coins. And so they can see if a coin came from the dark net immediately. Those coins get quarantined, segregated immediately. That's what the banks tell me. And that's what some of these service providers tell me that are in this space of creating sort of an AML screen for these coins.
Our guest is Frank Holm, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. Frank, we have a few minutes left. As I mentioned, U.S. Global does have a long history in the gold market, and you currently offer a gold miners ETF that I wanted to ask you about, the U.S. Global Go Gold and Precious Metal Miners ETF, ticker symbol GOAU. Can you tell us a little bit about what this ETF holds?
You know, what I saw in that digital world is how could I use a quant approach to picking gold stocks, and fund flows were different than the paradigm of the old gold analysts of looking at factors like NAVs, the price to book values, etc. It's antiquated, and most of the fund flows today are quant driven. So I noticed that the F factor, the Prokowski F factor, the Stanford professor, where they do a lot of income analysis, ratios on the income statement, they're much more predictive of where gold stocks are being picked and liquidity and where they'll go, and then sentiment analysis. So with that, I created this ETF, and I always knew that the royalty companies, which are a very superior business model, I was blessed to be able, as a young analyst, to be able to take a company public called Franco Nevada, which is the largest royalty company in the world. They have revenue of $21 million per employee. Goldman Sachs is $1 million. And it's a very stable cash flow. And there's Wheaton, so it used to be called Silver Wheaton, and Wheaton Resources. And then you have gold. The other one is Royalty, Gold Royalty. You have these companies, and they enjoy huge returns on capital. So they're 30% of the portfolio, three biggest names. They're 10% each. They rebalance each quarter. And then the model was to look at these other factors that drive sustainable performance. And what we noticed is a lot of these companies had made the acquisitions, financings, and it was very dilutive on the key financial factors on a per-share basis. So we modeled it for 25 other names, 80% are North American, 20% foreign. It scales down to $200 million market cap. And what it's done is the back testing said it would outperform, going back over 12 years, the GDXJ 92% of the time. So we felt confident in launching this product, And so we launched it, GoAU, Go Gold, on the New York Stock Exchange, and has done that. It's outperformed the GDXJ by a wide margin since we launched it 2 years ago. I think it's outperformed by 13%. So it's done exactly what the model said it would do. And hopefully, you know, past performance don't guarantee a future results, that it can maintain that selectivity rather than just market cap. We found that just buying big liquid market cap names and gold stocks is a losing proposition over time.
Frank, any quick thoughts on the current gold market? You know, gold had essentially been flat this year, but it shot up here recently. What's your take on gold?
Well, I think you've always advocated the golden rule, that is the 10% allocation of gold. When you look at Ray Dalio, Ray Dalio is the biggest hedge fund in the world. He's always has a position of gold against other countries' currencies and trades in and out around them. And if you look at data points, I think Morgan Stanley had a published report that over the past 20 years, the best asset class has been REITs. Second is gold. It's really shocking for a lot of people that gold would be such a great asset class. And the royalty companies have far outperformed the overall average gold stock. And so I think that you should have at least 10%. You can go up to a higher percent. But the magic, because of the volatilities when it comes to gold stocks, is to rebalance each quarter. If to give you an idea, the daily volatility of the S&P 500 and gold are about 1%, but gold stocks are 3%. So you've got to, when you get these runs, you have to be able to capture them and then recalibrate your portfolio. And that's what guys like Ray Dalio with Bridgewater do. So you can do it in the sort of modern portfolio theory of recalibrating on a regular basis.
Well, Frank, we're going to have to leave it there. Always appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us.
Well, happy investing.
Thank you. That was Frank Holm, CEO of U.S. Global Investors. And you can learn more about the Gold Miners ETF we discussed by visiting usglobaletfs.com.